Turuntuset tulee Joonel.
And our main topic today is about how to export a retail concept. And to start with, we have discussed here in Estonia the possibilities for Estonian companies to export their services. And comparing different markets' export data, we see that if in the developed countries, service export may take more than 50% from the export, then in Estonia it's only up to 25%. And Tony, you have a brilliant experience to share about how to export the concept of kiosks in different markets. And I would like to ask that, was your idea of operating kiosks in shopping centers meant to be global from the very beginning? Or did you start locally and adjusted the concept to different markets step by step?
Well, thank you for having me here. Hello. And I think it should be noted that I didn't actually start the export of what we call specialty leasing from the United States to Russia and Europe. That originated with a woman named Julia Lankauer, and Julia brought specialty leasing from the United States to the UK in about 2007, 2008. And I heard her give a lecture about specialty leasing in 2009, and I had just filed away the information to use at a later date. So I have to give Julia the credit of exporting the original idea from the United States to the UK. And then I take credit for taking the concept further by bringing specialty leasing to Russia from the UK. Is that clear?
Absolutely. How different is the concept in different markets? Is it different in UK, in US, in Russia? Or is it pretty much the same, not depending on the market?
It depends mostly on who's running the program. So for us in Russia, it's been very, very important for us to continue to push the bar higher and higher. And what I mean by that is we need to over-deliver because of the way Russian landlords are. They want more and more. And what we have to do in Russia, and what I think any provider would need to do anywhere, is overperform, not only financially, but by delivering more than they would be able and they would be interested to do themselves. So it's a very detailed type of program that we run. And what we do is we continue to add more detail, and then we continue to overperform in the way that we carry out those details.
So it means you are actually competing with the shopping centers that are your let's say your cooperation partners, or
they're definitely our partner. It has to be a partnership relationship, or we do compete. And what shopping centers have a core business, and their core business are their inline tenants. So those are your anchor tenants, your DIY, your huge furniture provider like an IKEA, and a sporting goods shop like a Decathlon. After you have your hypermarket, your sporting good, and your furniture, everything else are the inlines, and those are all different size inlines, from your Inditex group, which are your Zara's and your Pull&Bear's, down to smaller shops like Claire's and accessories. What we do is we commercialize the common area, and the common area is the gallery where people are walking. So we come out with we design a floor plan, which is a mixture of kiosks and RMUs. And then within that, it's a mixture of services, food, and retail. And what we have to do to make it more interesting than what the shopping center would do themselves is we have to do a lot of services like rotating the tenants, constantly bringing in new tenants, staying on top of the visual merchandising. And then we actually police our tenants by making sure that nobody's texting or reading books or eating food at their units.
So, Tony, tell us more, a little bit more about those kiosks. What is the business about? What is the core idea, and how big are those kiosks? Anything that our listeners would get the idea what you are doing exactly?
Okay, so a kiosk is a pretty standard in shopping centers anywhere. And when it's in a market that hasn't been developed the way Russia was when we started 6 years ago, they tend to be five by two, so 10 to 12 square meters inside a giant box, which is usually built too high and not merchandised very well. What we do is we come in and we change the design by lowering the sight lines, which means that you can see all the way through the shopping center without having any blockage by the kiosks. And the kiosks that we do are usually also 10 by either 10 to 12 square meters. And then we do what's called an RMU, which is a cart, and they tend to be 2 to 3 square meters. And there was a second part of the question, I'm sorry. The products.
Yes. What do you sell? Is it limited or what is it?
So we don't actually sell, we sublet. We provide the place for the tenants to sell, and we go out and we bring in tenants. And so what we do is we get a mixture of multinationals, which are your Swatch and your Crocs, and then we get nationals, which are usually a t-shirt printer, somebody doing hair straightening and a makeup. And then we get locals, which are mom and pops. It can be anything from somebody doing baked goods to homemade soaps. And we teach the mom and pops how to be successful entrepreneurs. And we help the nationals to become nationals. Some nationals actually become multinationals. And we service the multinationals to keep them happy because they are usually paying the bulk of the rent.
So if I would ask, what is your core competence or what is your best knowledge that you can easily take from one country to another and say it works, what is it?
Additional income. What makes us attractive to shopping centers is we deliver a higher additional income and sometimes pure additional income in a space that isn't currently
used
or driving income. So when we got to Sweden recently, about a year ago, we were shocked actually that there was no specialty leasing. And so anybody we were pitching to, we were giving them income, we were offering them income that they hadn't yet seen. What was interesting is as soon as we presented it, they said what any smart landlord would say is,
what
do I need you for? I'll do it myself. And then what everybody realizes is, smart landlords realize that this is not their core business. And to do it well, it's just a tremendous amount of details. So if they do it themselves, they might make the same money that we're paying them. They will rarely make more money than we're paying them, but they will not have as good a program as we will give them.
So how huge is your book that you're following? Or
book of the guidelines,
yes, your guidelines, I mean, yes. You said there are so many details. How many?
I don't actually have I've never counted that way. We organize our program with directors. Well, we have obviously a new business department, but our core business is running the show. And we have senior managers called specialty leasing managers. And beneath them, we have specialty leasing reps. And the reps each take at least one shopping center. If they're small centers with small programs, they can have up to five. And then we have obviously reps in every city. So in Russia, we're operating right now in 14 cities, and we're operating in 7 time zones. And that's just because Russia is
big. Russia is huge.
In the UK, a cleaner model. And in Sweden, we're following the UK model much closer than the Russian model in terms of how we organize and deliver the, or how we manage the process. But in terms of what we deliver, we've kind of written our own book, my partner Robert Courtney and I. Having started the business there, we really wrote the book on how to overperform and how to continue to raise the bar. So how do we do that? We do that with corporate trainings twice a year. We do that with traveling around to all of the centers and do, you know, surprise checks ourselves as owners. We do that by picking up best international standards and applying them vigorously. We do that by changing out our visual merchandisers, our designers from time to time to keep it exciting and new. Because the worst thing for a shopping center and the worst thing for an inline is if the corridors are dead. So what we do is we bring life to the corridor. And in Russia, for example, right now, that's very important because right now the business is off. And the business is off because we have yet another crisis. We've had quite a few crises in my tenure in Russia.
And it's always crisis in Russia.
It is. We're not going to get into that today, I hope.
No.
But it is very, it's very challenging. So we have to keep the corridors looking alive and busy. We have to keep them interesting and exciting. When the market is good, people don't want to see the same thing all the time because, especially in Russia now, there are so many choices. It's not like 10 years ago where there was one mega mall in Moscow and everybody within, you know, 400 miles, 400, 500 kilometers flocked to that one shopping center. There are really many shopping centers in every city across Russia now.
Is the taste different in different markets, and does it influence your business? I mean, the Russian taste, as we know from Estonia, is a bit different compared to Scandinavian one. Do you have the same designers in all the countries, or do you adjust the design and your offering of visual merchandising to the taste of the country?
Great question. We not only have to change the design of our, we'll call it furniture, being the kiosks and the RMUs, by the country, but we also have to do it by the developer or by the concept and even by the city. So in Russia, it's much more challenging and much more diverse than it is in Scandinavia. But in Scandinavia, where one would believe that they all have this very streamlined look about how they approach furniture, it's not necessarily true when you get there. So if you're doing it, you could be doing a shopping center that's looking for an old city look, or you could be looking for somebody looking for, you know, a streamlined Scandinavian look, or you could. So to answer your question, we have a portfolio of different RMU and kiosk designs that we offer to any new center. And then we can tweak the design of any kiosk or RMU to fit a specific center, and that might be with a lighting fixture or the type of signage that goes on the unit, obviously the color or the finish. We use all wooden furniture indoors, so it could be the veneer, the color of the veneer, the finish of the veneer. And then we put what we call shelf pads on all the horizontal surfaces, and that can change dramatically in color and texture.
How have you chosen the markets? Why Russia? Or why Scandinavia? Or why any other markets you have chosen? Is there something to do with the growth? Because we know that the Russian market was growing very fast during the last 10 years, not now. If you compare to Scandinavia, I think the growth was much less if you look at the shopping centers. Or am I wrong? Or how do you choose?
So I was already in Russia. I brought, little segue, but I brought outdoor advertising and neon sign manufacturing to Russia from New York in 1993. And that would be a whole radio show all to itself, so I'll just leave that. So I was in Russia and I sold my outdoor company in 2005. And then I did an advertising agency and I did a restaurant and some other things. And then I needed something new, and I remembered having seen the Julia Lang presentation in 2009, and I decided to specialty leasing to Russia. I did not expect it to be as successful as it was, and it really took off, which was great. My partners and I, we all really enjoyed everything about the first 5 years of the business. The last two have been much more challenging. We lost our key client, so we had to build our portfolio very quickly and very dramatically. And then, of course, now the situation this year with Ukraine, kind of nobody saw that coming, so we weren't prepared for that. Scandinavia was different. Scandinavia had enjoyed growth in the shopping center industry for, I guess, the last 10 years. They just had a natural growth every year, and they were very happy with that, so they weren't looking for any additional income. They were just happy with their appreciation values going up on an annual basis. And it wasn't until, well, I guess 2008, they, like everybody, got hit, but they didn't really notice it until 2010. And so when we came in 2012 and offered specialty leasing services, for them it was brand new additional income that they had thought about but never knew how to take, you know, how to tackle it. So a couple of the developers had tried to get into specialty leasing, but did not manage to either do it well. It's a real headache. So if it's not your core business, it's very hard to focus on it because it seems like such small money. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we come in as an anchor tenant to a large center because if we put in 30 or 40 units, and it's a mixture of 10 kiosks or half kiosks and half RMUs, they can easily be, you know, hundreds of square meters. And we're paying a premium rate for the square meters compared to what the inlines are paying per square meter. But we only pay for the area where the unit sits, and the unit itself is where we display the goods that are being sold. And in the case of an RMU, the person selling is standing outside the unit, and in the case of a kiosk, the person is standing inside the unit. So we're not paying for the square meters where people are walking, whereas with an inline, they're paying for the display, the space behind the counter, and all of the space where people are walking. So it's a lower price point per square meter. We also don't have to get our customers to walk into the shop. We're in the corridor, so they're walking by us constantly. So it's really impulse shopping. And the key to selling something in the corridor is to make sure that you have product that is priced low and that it's the kind of thing that people buy on impulse, not because nobody goes to a shopping center to buy something from an RMU.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you manage the personnel? I imagine how difficult it might be in different markets, in different cities. You are, if you told you are in 14 cities in 7 time zones, how do you find them? How do you train them? And how do you really keep them, let's say, open-minded enough not to use the time there for the, I don't know, doing something that is not work or being really kind of active in helping people to make the choice?
So first I have to go back and repeat that we don't actually
manage people.
Don't you?
No, we do manage people, but we don't have our people selling product.
Really?
Our people are leasing space and managing tenants.
Okay.
So we are more like a leasing agent, but also responsible. We take it further because we're responsible to make sure that the people leasing the air. So I don't want to mention any of the agency names, but if an agency is leasing out the inlines, all they do is get the contract signed and they're done. They move on, they get their commission. We don't work that way. We lease out square meters in the common area. We find tenants, we manage those tenants. We collect all of those rents. We pay one rent to the shopping center. We're responsible for their rent. We're responsible for their insurance. We're responsible if they don't open on time. We're responsible if they eat or drink or text or sleep. Are you there?
Yeah, we are here.
I'm sorry, my screen.
Not sleeping.
Okay. So that is a very important point to make sure that you understand.
So, if I own a company,
so for our employees, we work on a base salary bonus program.
Of course, but let's say so that if I own a company who sells, I don't know, socks, hundreds of different patterns, different colors, different sorts, and I think that maybe this would be wise to be sold in the kiosks that you have. Does it mean that I have to provide you not the fixtures, because this is something you have by yourself and you can design the most beautiful visual merchandising and layout for how to display the socks in a very different way. But does it mean that me as a company, I have to provide you a person or at least two or probably a team of persons working there? As we know that the opening times of the shopping centers are so long, so you need to have a team to manage even the small business there in the shopping center. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
So it gets tricky, but in Moscow, the shopping centers are open 12 hours.
Yeah.
As they are in the U.S. They're not open as long in Scandinavia. Germany is less. And the U.K. varies. Russia, they're open in 365 days a year.
It's almost the same here in Estonia.
Okay. And then you have busy times. So you have busy times. You have really dead times. For example, yeah. Mondays and Tuesdays where it's dead all day. But traditionally, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday are all good days. And you may want to have two people on your army or your kiosk during those hours. We don't let people on RMUs, which are the carts, put anything behind glass. Everything has to be immediately accessible to touch and feel. We find that impulse sales, the customer has to be able to touch the product. And of course, our tenants get concerned because of shrinkage or theft.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask about that.
What we have found worldwide is that indeed, theft goes up when you take everything out from behind the glass, but theft does not go up proportionally to how much the sales go up.
That's true.
So you may experience twice or even three times as much theft as you did before, but you sell 100 times more than you sold before. And it's very important for us that they sell, because if they don't sell, they obviously cannot pay their rent. And we also have a turnover rent built in, so that at a certain point, at a certain break point, they have to pay an additional percentage of their income to us.
Tony, tell me, what has been the most challenging in their expansion in different markets? You have such a career in business before you started with kiosks business. So what has been challenging for you in that business?
Well, the way people shop actually varies from one place to another. The products that people buy or how much they're willing to pay for them change dramatically. The most challenging thing is for us to educate our own people on how important it is to overperform and to raise the bar. It's just something that doesn't seem that important, especially when times are good, that we should be doing more. You know, we often get from our own employees, hey, come on, you know, look how great we're doing. Why should we work harder? Why should we improve the visual merchandising or switch out tenants or rotated tenants? Our tenants are perfectly happy where they are. Why should we move them? And it's hard to educate. Sometimes it's hard to understand ourselves why we do these things. but in the end of the day, if we don't keep it more complex, and the shopping center would do it themselves. The fact is, they eventually they probably won't need us.
Has it happened that they have changed and told that, okay, we have pretty much looked what you do, we understand how does it work, it's not so difficult, we'll do, we do it ourselves. Was this the case in Russia, or did they just stop?
Yeah, with we've had that. We had that experience in Russia with one of our major accounts. And our licensors had that experience in the UK with some of their major accounts. Now, in the UK, eventually they all came back to them.
In Russia?
We think that eventually they will come back to us too, but we're much younger. So they've only left us a year ago.
Is there any juridical ways to protect yourself or your concept from taking over?
There is now. There wasn't when we started. So we had to invent new ways of writing contracts with our landlords so that they couldn't. Of course, anybody can break a contract and pay a penalty and move on. And the key to our business with our landlords is that we do have a partnership-like relationship. The biggest problem you run into in any developing country is that the expat executive staff is temporary. Nobody's there for more than 3 years. So in a Scandinavian market, we're dealing with people who have been working in the same shopping center for many, many years and will probably continue to work in the same shopping center for many, many years. So the relationship you build with these people is something you can kind of, you can rely on it. When you have new people coming in all the time, every time a new person comes into a major position, say a leasing manager from another country, they have to prove themselves. And every time they have to prove themselves, they're looking for somewhere to put additional income, not into the shopping center, but into their portfolio of what they've done for the center. And that's incredibly challenging.
Do you have any good recipes to share?
Recipes? I don't understand what you mean. I remember seeing that somewhere.
Do you have any good suggestions how you have managed with fast turnover of the personnel in your shopping centers? Good hints that tend to work?
Well, in terms of our personnel, we compensate them very well. That's how we keep our people.
But if the shopping centers are changing their managers, and this is affecting or might affect your people, do you have any good ideas there or any good solutions?
We try to renegotiate our contracts at least a year before they expire, so that anybody coming in is always in the middle of a contract, not coming up towards the end of a contract.
Okay. It's a good idea. Gives at least some kind of security.
We have to keep overperforming ourselves so that when somebody new comes in, they're hearing only good things about us, about what we do. And the best way for us to do that is to constantly meet with the upper management. And when I say constantly, you know, we're really lucky if we get to meet on an ownership level, myself and my partners, meeting with the owner or director of a shopping center once or twice a year would be an absolute must. Twice would be preferable.
And then, of course, all the contacts on a daily basis with the managers with whom your team is working with.
Correct. And those are done on a weekly basis.
I would ask my last question, and it's about if you would suggest one most important mistake or difficulties that the big shop owners, landlords, they face when they are taking too easily your concept and saying you goodbye. What is the most difficult thing they have to face then without you that they maybe did not know before, did not think about?
The thousands of details.
Yes, I know there are thousands.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
But maybe one common thing or something.
Sure. No, I'll give it to you. The single greatest thing we do for a landlord, other than take the responsibility of paying for the unit, whether it's leased or not. So they have no risk. They get their rent whether we have a tenant or not. They send us one invoice. So if we have 80, well, that's a lot, but if we have 60 units working in a shopping center, if we're not there, they have to chase 60 mom and pops on top of their core business, which are their inlines, on a monthly basis. So one of the key things we do is we take care of all of their invoicing with one invoice. Another thing we do is we, with our RMUs, we switch out the tenant. We switch two things on every RMU, two of the three. So it's change the tenant, change the concept, or change the visual merchandising. And two of those things happen on every one of those small units every 3 months. It's a tremendous amount of work. But what that does is it keeps the shopping center looking different and exciting and more interesting.
That's true. What are the synergies in the business? I mean, do you have economies of scales looking at the tenants that you can have the, not probably mom and pop stores that are very local, but the nationals, you can manage them somehow rotating between the shopping centers in the cities? Or are there any synergies? Are you looking for it? And is that something that is helpful for you in the market, even profit-wise?
Yeah. So if we have the portfolio of the best centers in a territory or in a country, we can leverage packages with our tenants that want to be in all of the good centers. If they want to be in all of the good centers, they also have to be in most of the not-so-good centers. And we give them preferred situations in the good centers, but they have to help us out in some of the weaker centers. At the very beginning, you asked me, what's some of the downside of growing, of globalization? I forget what you asked me exactly, but one downside of the business is what's happened in the U.S. Now, the U.S. invented this. They put the first kiosk and the first cart into the shopping center some 30 years ago. If you go to the U.S., every single shopping center in the U.S. has the same national tenants. So the furniture may be a little bit different, but everything being sold on every RMU and in every kiosk is the same, with very few exceptions. That started to happen in Russia, and we really got on top of it. And it takes a lot of work to develop an entrepreneurial person onto an RMU and help them to become successful. And of course, you have a lot of failures. So if you have, well, say 40 or 50% success rate, you're doing quite well. It's very important to try to keep them looking fresh and bring in more and more mom and pops. But it's so easy to just kick back and sign more nationals. You know, just have 30 nationals and you don't have to do anything. So a big part of the work that we make our people do is canvassing for new tenants, for new concepts. And I would say that the program in Russia is probably one of the most interesting programs in the world today, because of the amount of effort that we've put into canvassing to find entrepreneurs and groom them into coming into the RMU program.
Absolutely. I just have one last question, as we usually ask. The background of the question is that during our first shows, we used to talk about Estonian log houses. And then when the Russian crisis started, then we thought that we need more to talk about or discuss about food industry, how our different participants in our show can help them with the ideas. And here comes my last question, that is that what do you think Estonian food producers learn from you, from the experience that you have?
You know, it's funny, I read that question a number of times.
Okay.
And I just listened to it, and I'm still not sure what you wanted me to say, but what you, but what I'd like to do is comment and see if I answer the question, and if I don't, then you can ask me again.
Okay.
So we do a lot of sampling. So people who rent units in the corridor shopping centers are using them for, I guess, four different things: retail, food, entertainment, and promotion. And inside the promo would be sampling. And we have a lot of problems in fixing the rent, because if somebody's doing promo, we'd be charging them more money per square meter, even though they're not selling anything, than we would charge them if they're selling, than if they're doing something in retail. The same thing applies for food. So it's very expensive to start. It's very scary to move into a shopping center with a food concept, because so many concepts fail. Food courts are generally, they're very, very well thought out, and they're usually brand oriented, in that the companies that are going into a food court are really good at selling really inexpensive food and making money with it. Where food producers can do very well in a shopping center and sort of test the market is on a food kiosk. It's still a pretty significant investment, but it's nothing near the investment that you would have to put in to fit out a food court restaurant. And so I'm guessing for about, well, well under $100,000 US, you could have a working food concept in a shopping center and know whether or not it's something that you would want to scale up into a full, a food court kind of item, or if you just want to expand and have one or two food kiosks in each shopping center. Does that answer your question?
Yes, perfectly. Thank you.
You're welcome. But that also goes to any product. So, and we find this at Christmas time, we'll find one of the major chocolate companies who want to do a chocolate giveaway, or they want to sell a Christmas chocolate, but they're not going to be there for more than the Christmas period, and they're really not doing it to make money. They're not even doing it to break even. They're doing it to advertise their chocolate so that even the people who aren't buying it on their way to the hypermarket already have that food, that chocolate name in their head, and so that when they go to do their shopping, they continue to.
But I think it's a kind of very exciting concept, and I really like the way how you have built it. But I think that many Estonian companies and producers should think about how to use this type of kiosks or this type of concept in order to test the foreign markets and in order to really really understand what should they do there before making the major entrance. And from the service exporting point of view, I think it's a very clear proof about how detailed you really need to be in order to have a successful concept. It just doesn't help that if you have the major guidelines ready, it's nothing. It has to be a really kind of operating business model that you are bringing into a new markets, and I think it's a very good example of that. So thank you for sharing with us the story.